Log Talk Radio.
Okay, good morning. The music is not going to play. Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A and Mr. Edwards over in Studio B. How you doing, Mr. Edwards?
Don, I can't complain. Wouldn't do any good. I'm just watching the world go on around us. Things happening. Just looking at the front page of the big local newspaper here in Minneapolis, man. Looks like Omar is having some problems with her contest. Of course, the big story is the arrest and et cetera. Then we got, we certainly want to talk about that later on.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like they're trying to come after the chief. But, hey, in the production meeting, you were saying that there's some dispute. Is there some dispute amongst us, amongst the difference between a device and a bomb?
Yeah. Because there was some plastic around in this latest this terror scare. And I understand the motive behind it, but this guy sent things that were made to look like pipe bombs. And they were plastic, and there was descriptions anywhere from NPR to the Washington Post. Just from the pictures, because you know none of the newspapers that was able to touch one, probably just look at it. And so I think there's a huge difference. You know, it's a device that looks like a bomb. And people, you know, I guess the bomb thing is a better headline. But to me, it was a device.
So you don't think that it could have killed you, you know, if it had blown up, if it exploded? You don't think it could have killed you?
If there were substance inside of it that were like flammable,
like gunpowder, stuff like that.
Okay. Sulfur, yeah. Sulfur. If that were that kind of stuff in there, in the ones that were like received at CNN, so the early report.
How many bombs were sent altogether? Do you remember?
I have no idea, Mr. Edwards. I have no idea. I know there was quite a few, and I mean, I watched some of the coverage on the cable news network and kind of snickled a little bit. You know, I'm glad anybody didn't get hurt, but, you know, again, you know, it's who can get the headline out, bomb or device.
Oh, okay. Okay,
we're not going to even.
A headline thing. Okay, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. So what do you take on the president's response? He seemed to be somewhat unhappy yesterday and the day before that there was too much being put into that. We weren't paying enough attention to the migrants coming up to Mexico. What's that number down to now? It was 7,000 this time last week. What's the number now? Anybody know?
But I don't. Our phone lines are open, though. If someone knows and wants to call in,
let's give them the number.
Sure.
The phone is open here on a Saturday morning in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. By the way, we will certainly have to talk in the latter part of this morning's program about the attempt to possibly undermine Chief Medela Arredondo and stop him from being appointed permanent chief. So have you seen any of the interviews with anybody as it pertains to the Mohammed Noor situation? You picked up anything there?
No, I haven't seen anything, Mr. Edwards. To be honest with you, I have not. And
okay.
I've been perusing the Star and Tribune every day, and no, I haven't. Not in the last couple days, at least.
Yeah.
I don't see anything.
Yeah, well, I guess they're staying away from talking in terms of specifically what's happening, but there has been some information and stuff out there. KSTP is really going for kind of jugular vein. They're doing a three-part series. That's the reason I was asking, had you seen it? They're doing a three-part series on how the Justine Dahmen Rusnik situation was handled. And one of the things that was kind of scary was the father said in the interview, KSTP sent a reporter all the way to Australia, that no one ever apologized to him and, you know, his family. I thought that there had been an apology, but I guess there hadn't been.
That was
a bad move. Of course, that was the job of then-Mayor Betsy Hodges and the command, which did include Chief Arredondo as assistant chief, but I just thought that they had apologized to the family. I know that that Rondo, in the case of Blevins, Mr. Blevins, shot and killed on the 23rd of June, had met with and and offered his apologies and condolences to the family. But I was shocked to hear the father of Justine indicate in the interview last night with KSTP that no one ever apologized to him. I thought, oh, wow. He said, that's why filed the $50 million lawsuit. So, anyways, things are going on. But what do they know about?
We do have
guy,
a caller.
This Caesar. What is he? They said he's a white guy. He doesn't look white to me.
No, from the pictures online, Mr. Edwards, and we do have a caller holding. He looks kind of Hispanic or Latino, wouldn't you say?
That's what I think. Sounds like to me. That's what it looks like. But we got a caller. Let's give them. People getting up this early in the morning.
Yes,
so go ahead, caller. What can we do for you? What's your question?
I just want to listen.
Caller,
to
you're live.
You.
Go ahead.
I just want to listen. And
okay. All right.
Oh, that's someone in the queue? Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
I'm sorry. I was queue hunting. Go ahead.
No. What do we got? Another call?
To answer your question, no. I thought we did. But no, to answer your question, he does look Hispanic or Latino and doesn't look like a white guy. And it's very peculiar. And I saw the pictures of them leading him out of the. Was that an auto zone or something like that in Miami or close to Miami? And but one thing, you know, Mr. Edwards alleged that he was a male stripper and he stripped at different clubs, according to a couple articles, one being the Washington Post. And he was a from what these people are saying, and like it's hearsay, so it's not really good. And I'm just looking at some other websites here that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really politically involved. So, I mean, that's
he said he was or he wasn't?
He was.
Oh,
very
yeah.
politically involved.
You say he was a male stripper at one time because he's kind of old to be a male stripper now. He's 56. So, I guess, you know.
Yeah, at one time.
I don't know that would excite any of the girls. Yeah. But they said he was a male stripper. Yeah, I was looking at an article in the New York Times. They were talking about his last real job was as a pizza delivery man.
Well,
yeah.
At some point he was doing that too, and they had pictures online of him, you know, from that era, and like it wasn't recent, of course. But yeah, they did. So, yeah, it's very interesting.
Where
I mean,
is he
originally
from? Born in Florida? Is he out of Florida? Is he born in Florida? What's the deal?
I'm not sure where he was born. I'm not sure. I did not look that deep into it. I know that he was in Minnesota at one point. And he was in custody in 2005, and the Hennepin County attorney had dropped the charges and released him. That was Amy Klobuchar at the time.
And that was 2005, you say, Doc?
2005, yes.
And what were the charges? I mean, what was he arrested or being held for?
They were some random drug charges. It was some drug charges.
So he was in Minnesota? Is that right?
Yes. They did an accurate timeline. I think it was CNN did a perfect timeline of this guy, where he was, what happened to him legally, and where it happened to him at. And they laid it out. I'm actually looking for it right now.
Sure.
I originally got that.
Sure.
I had it in my notes.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So he was and he was in Minnesota. Now, this was when? 2005, do you think?
Yeah.
I wonder how he got up to what he was doing up here in Minnesota.
I have no idea. I did not know him. I don't think anybody knew him.
Well,
I think he was a male strip club. Yeah. I don't think anybody knew him. He was below the radar.
Boy, that's mysterious that he would be up here in Minnesota. Wow. Wonder when he was first arrested. Because there appears to be some information out there on that. When did you pick up the Minnesota piece? You picked that up when?
Yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yesterday on KSTP. Their article, the headline, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the headline on KSTP was mail bombing suspect arrested in Florida had brushes with law in Minnesota. Yeah.
Okay, that was KSTP. So they
okay.
were same
oh, matter
time
fact,
they were
yeah,
they
was,
were doing.
It was. Here I'm pulling it up right here. Goes Mr. Edwards right here. October 26, 2018. Posted at 10:36 p.m. oh, wow, it goes back further than I thought. Then this, just that little note I took off one website, KSTP, dug down in it. It says Cesar Sayoc, 56, was charged in 1995 with fifth-degree possession of crack cocaine and theft by swindle of over $500. Those charges were dismissed in 2005.
Jeez,
which is,
10 years later.
The evidence. Yeah,
10 years later, the charges were dropped. And that was, you said, you made your point to point out that was now United States Senator Amy Klobuchar was the county attorney then?
Yes, yes. Yes, she was.
I wonder why the charges lingered that long.
I'll tell you. Let me read this. This is going to trip you out, Mr. Edwards. It says, the 2005 dismissal order reads as follows. The state of Minnesota hereby dismisses the above caption case on the grounds. Check this. The drugs were never destroyed in 1997 and never brought to the city chemist.
Is that right? Isn't that interesting? That was an interesting time because there was a lot of drugs on the streets. Now, was he in Minneapolis? Well, he had to be if it was Hennepin County. He was living somewhere in Hennepin County.
The courts actually list Plymouth, Minnesota address. So he was in Minnesota.
Well, that would be Ridgedale. That's Ridgedale. Plymouth, Minnesota. All their matters are adjudicated in the Ridgedale Justice Center there in the big Ridgedale complex. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
So,
yep.
Wow, that's interesting that happened out there.
Isn't that
10 years?
But think back during that time of 10 years when the drug thing, the crack cocaine, was persuasive everywhere, just exploded. There was if you recall, every now and then some blogger or someone would ask, you know, how much of this cocaine is getting back out on the streets in Minneapolis and St. Paul or the Twin Cities. You know, and they're flat out saying on a legal document, on a complaint that, well, you know, over that 10-year period, these drugs that they arrested this man on in the first thing, it was a little bit, never made it to the city chemist, who would then be directed to destroy it, if I'm not mistaken. So I wonder how many times.
Well, you got to be careful on a destroy because you have to keep it for evidence until the case is adjudicated, so you don't want it. But it doesn't make any difference. You're saying that you're reading from a document, 1997, that they destroyed the drugs. I wonder who this guy was. I mean, I wonder, you know, who he was to have that kind of activity, backup.
Yeah, that was some.
Is there anything else in there on him and the documents that you were able to capture?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It says, let me just go through here real quick. Okay, the criminal complaint.
And by the way, we got any calls holding?
Yes, we do. We have one holding. From 19. As soon as I read this, we can get our caller because I'm sure he wants to chime in on this. The criminal complaint from 1995 states officers in Edina and Bloomington were dispatched to various nutrition centers where they were informed a male, later identified as Sayoc, also listed as Sabok, in court records had been purchasing vitamins, then returning them and filling with beans and taking a refund. The complaint goes on to state that after he was arrested, he continuously thrashed around the backseat of the squad car. Once he was secure in jail, the officer reported checking on the floor of the squad car and find a suspected crack cocaine under the seat where he had been sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's very interesting. The 2005 dismissal, and I read that. Wow, wait, this is like really interesting, Mr. Edwards. After I'm reading it, I'm like, okay. So he was arrested because he was in the backseat of a car. Well, he was doing something, and they caught him for that, the returning beans and getting a refund, and they arrested him, put him back in the car, and found some crack cocaine.
They put him in the police car, and some way or another, they probably had his hands handcuffed behind him, and he was able to get his crack pipe, according to what you're reading, and he took the crack pipe thrashing around and pushed the crack pipe somewhere down in the car, which they automatically made it his, if you will. So, Yeah, so that was way back. Wow, that was way back in 1995. All right, let's get the callers in, man, because I'm getting the text message.
Yeah,
there's some questions coming in for us.
A caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Looks like the friend of the show.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Morning,
We're
sir.
Doing great.
Good morning. Yeah, good morning. Yeah, I was calling from the Midwest here. And, yeah, I think you guys kind of pretty much answered or went over a lot of what I wanted to talk about, too, about his possession of crack and a theft by swindle that he was charged with. I was just curious exactly, could you repeat again exactly why the charges were dropped, though? Or,
Don, you've got that information in front of you on computer.
Yeah.
The charges were dropped what?
It was a 2005 dismissal order that read, the state of Minnesota hereby dismisses the above-captioned case on the grounds, semicolon, the drugs were destroyed in 1997 and never brought to the city chemist.
Oh, okay. All right. That's interesting. One other thing, too, you were talking about his race or ethnicity, and I kind of wanted to clear that up a little bit. He apparently one of his parents, not sure which one, was Italian and one was Filipino. So I guess he's a mixed sort of race, ethnicity.
That kind of explains the last name, the pronunciation. So his parents were, Filipino and Italian.
Italian, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do they indicate where he was born? Because I have to indicate to you now that there is a history with regards to this person that is an attempt is certainly being made here in Minnesota to suppress it. Do they indicate how he got here, where he was working, what he was doing when he was arrested in 1995?
No, they really didn't go into what he was doing when he was in Minnesota. I've been trying to figure out because they also haven't said anything about exactly where he was born. I'm just kind of assuming that's been born here, I guess. But I just thought it was interesting because they said the only thing they've been talking about is his extensive, criminal history and the like.
Okay.
So I know that he is, but I was wondering if you all knew anything about whether he had any more connections to Minnesota.
Yes, we do. And I was just like I asked my associate, Mr. Allen, where he was obtaining his information. And as he pointed out, he had uncovered some things yesterday. But he probably, Mr. Allen, would probably not know the history of this individual. Obviously, you did the same thing because this person had a connection to law enforcement. And I now indicate that on the record. When I saw his picture yesterday morning, I was kind of taken back because I said, I've seen this individual before, and upon research by my people, if you will, and then the conversations with you, this individual was a part of a judiciary execution team that operated in our city here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, in the 1990s, if you will. That's the reason I kept asking my associate, Mr. Allen, why this person had the charges dismissed by the current United States Senator, Senior Senator, Amy Klobuchar, in 2005. It is really hard to be able to understand how 10 years later and 8 years after the evidence has allegedly been destroyed, that a person that happened. I'm kind of wondering, now we're into an area in which I don't think anybody's going to be able to answer, but was that determination made by petition? Was the county attorney's office petitioned by somebody, by another government entity, if you will, to purge that information? I'd be interested to see what the history shows, particularly in that this individual was working closely with two Hispanic police officers at the Minneapolis Police Department who had been in other jurisdictions before they came to the Minneapolis Police Department in the 1980s. One from Oakland, California, Batista, the other one from Miami, and reason to believe that the one that came from Miami was this individual. If not, it was an associate of his. I could well remember a very suspicious killing of an African-American who turned out to be Department of Defense Intelligence, if you will, at a bar. I don't know that you would know this caller, but certainly my associate, Mr. Allen, would. There's a bar on a street called Glenwood and Royalston, a couple blocks away from the Greyhound bus depot, and one afternoon, daytime, an African-American came into a establishment, sat down, told bartender he was waiting for somebody, got a beer or something like that. And the officer identified as Batista, who had transferred to the Minneapolis Police Department from the Oakland Police Department, came in, shot him dead. Later it was found out that this individual, deceased African-American, as I said earlier, was a special agent for the Department of Defense because they were dealing with drug movement and et cetera. Later, and it's all this is in the paper and the archives of the Star Tribune and some of the TV stations. Later, a very high-profile cartel person who was living up and around Pine City, Minnesota, which is about 50 miles north of here, had his own airplane. And I think a caller from the Midwest, I think you have a pretty good idea of conversations during the situation with Ferguson, is that when you have your own private aircraft and you are operating out of small airports and et cetera, you can move a lot of drugs. And this individual that is now in custody in the southern, well, in Florida, the Southern District of Florida, was one of the associates of these Hispanic officers, one who transferred from Oakland, the other one who transferred from Miami, and were responsible for the deaths of at least 6 to 7 young African-Americans over a period of a couple years. And so it's the reason I was kind of asking the question on, you know, that all of a sudden the information came out. Let me just say this to my associate and to you, caller. It was a mistake by the CCO when they reported that at 6 o'clock yesterday evening. That was a mistake. They were not supposed to, locally here, they were not supposed to report per se on that. Mr. Allen has said that that information had initially come up on a couple of websites and et cetera. That was a real error because Caesar had left the reservation, if you know what I mean. And everyone thought that he was gone, if you will, because authorities were trying to make sure that all of that that happened in the 1990s here in Minneapolis to young African-Americans by judicial hit team, that all of that never came back up again. It did later on. It helped destroy the African-American Police Federation. It led to the most senior in terms of tenure police officer, in black police officer in the Minneapolis Black Police Association, to be falsely really charged by the federal government and ultimately sentenced to Leavenworth Penitentiary for 1 year, destroying his career as a law enforcement officer. And it just destroyed the Black Police Officer Association. In fact, we don't have a Black Police Officer Association here in Minneapolis jurisdiction. So I appreciate your calling and making inquiry, because apparently you also have picked up some things consistent with some of our discussions back during the days of Ferguson, when a couple of these individuals were operating in St. Louis City and St. Louis County. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So the drug thing was what messed it up. There was not supposed to be any reference to his drug activity, and there was a whole lot more than just a crack pipe and a couple grams of crack cocaine. It's going to be interesting on how the feds deal with this. My colleague and I, Mr. Allen, have kind of gone back and forth. He maintains that the explosive devices were just devices that could do no damage. I disagree, and I would take the position of the head of the FBI, the ATF, the Postal Service, and et cetera, that those devices, if they had exploded, would severely damage, injure, or kill you. And let me say it like this, and if you have any questions, call or feel free to quiz me on it. Sometimes when you buy certain material to prepare an instrument of death, one of the things you want to stay away from is getting all of your materials, such as batteries, boots, all at the same location. Because if you get a bad batch, you get a bad batch. And so it'll be interesting to see what the FBI's crime laboratory in Virginia has to say with regards to could these devices have been fully engaged. But, hey, appreciate the call. But, yes, there is a history as it pertains to this individual. I know that, unfortunately, many folks don't know, but many in law enforcement know just who he is and what he was doing here in Minnesota in 1993, 1994, and 1995, if you will.
Yeah.
Interesting
yeah.
to see where he was actually born and when did he come to Minnesota, who was he employed by, and what was his relationship with the two Hispanic police officers in the Minneapolis Police Department during the period in which at least 8, 9 young African-Americans were gunned down. Found, you'd always found dead in the middle of the street with at least 2 bullets in their heads.
Yeah.
As well as the Hispanic Mexican Calais person who had his own private aircraft and was bringing millions of dollars of crack cocaine into the Twin Cities, which caused the breakout of a conflict between North and South, gangs in North and South Minneapolis. But any additional questions to us? Because you did ask the pointed question. You know, we know anything about this guy.
Yeah, I guess I did look here, and he was born in New York, and then moved to Florida as a young man, and actually I believe graduated from Miami Beach High School. So I guess he's been in the Florida area for quite a while down there. So,
but clearly in 1995 he wasn't in Florida per se.
Yeah,
he was in a place called Minnesota.
Yeah, his movements around the country, I'm sure, are probably pretty interesting, and what he's done. So, I mean, I think his history is going to be very important to this whole investigation too. So, I have one last question, then I'll go, and that is, what do you think? Because this has been kind of a well, I'm not exactly sure how to put it, not make it blame on the administration, but what is their part in all of this, this atmosphere that we have now?
Of division, hatred,
et
cetera.
Yeah,
I think it's extremely dangerous. I think it is as dangerous as any time in the history of this country since the Civil War of 1861. The president, this is my take, Mr. Allen, my co-associate has certainly his. The president seemed to be very irritated about how the description was being made about the quote-unquote devices. Of course, the head of the FBI, the ATF, I watched all of the newscasts and et cetera. Even Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions, Attorney General of the United States, did not back down from saying that these were instruments of terror and death and et cetera. To your specific question, I think that, number one, there's more than one person involved. I think this is a well-calculated effort, and we must not lose sight, particularly those of us who are African Americans, if you will, that one of the intended victims of whatever was supposed to happen was the African American and 44th President of the United States, Barack Obama, and his family. Anytime that you take the kind of action that Caesar took against the interest of public officials, you are subject, quote unquote, to face capital charges, if you will. Obviously, the media talk in terms that this man is now looking at 48 years of incarceration, which is the remainder of his life. I mean, he's 56. He ain't going to make it much longer. Being whatever it is. My take is that this is much more tainted conspiracy. And I think that the current administration in the White House has aided and abetted a situation. You have to understand that there were some very important African Americans, as well as white folks, who were targeted. Senator Harris in California, Maxine Waters, who Donald Trump hates, if you will, Eric Holder, former U.S. Attorney General, if you will, and God knows the Obama and Clinton families, the former heads of the CIA. I mean, this guy, for a person that allegedly can't spell well, he sure knew how to make contact. And I have reason to believe the following to your question. Is that he has associates who are still out there. I'm afraid there are still packages out there, and he is working with people who are working out of two bomb-making facilities, one in Idaho, the other one in North Carolina. I repeat that and stand by that. We are not hearing what we need to hear, if you will, as the general public, about these circumstances. I mean, you think about it. This is a guy, you know, irrespective of the truck that he had, you know, with all the paraphernalia and et cetera, this guy has sent out at least 14 packages of devices, bombs, or whatever you choose to call it for whatever reason. He is not acting alone.
No.
And
well, just,
if I were he, I'd be very careful when I go into the shower room to shower.
Well, I was
he
just
could
thinking
be facing the same thing as Dylan Root. But go ahead, sir. I don't know if I answered.
No, I was just thinking.
That's my take based on my knowledge of some of the things that are going on, particularly the presence and the existence of two bomb making factories under the control of extremist right wingers right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing that, like you said, that for somebody who doesn't spell very well and acts like he does, he sure, how did he get all these addresses of all these people? I don't get that. I mean, that took some time and effort to go and get all that information.
Yeah, he wasn't in this alone. I'll tell you that, right? Just like Mr. Edwards said, this guy did not do this by himself, okay?
Yeah.
there's no doubt about that. So it'd be interesting to see. Go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I was going to listen to you, the guy on the air here. So thank you very much.
I appreciate you certainly making us respond to the fact that there is a Minnesota connection with this individual and his co-conspirator. Thank you, sir. Take care.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye.
We got any other calls, Mr. Allen? If we have, let's get them all.
We'll talk quite some time with this
caller on a Saturday morning.
We just have a few people in the queue that just are in the queue, and that's fine. The calling number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And, again, the phone lines are wide open if you have a question, comment, or you'd like to challenge us on something. But anyway, Mr. Edwards, this it's very interesting. We had just touched lightly on Ilhan Omar, if I'm not mistaken, or the Omar Ilhan, the 5th Congressional District candidate that looks like she's about to make history as the first Somali congressperson, woman, I'll put it like that.
Uh-huh.
And And I know there's like Alpha News and even the Star and Tribune who not only joined with Alpha News to go after Congressman Ellison and his wife, but, you know, they're kind of looking at this too, from what I understand. But, you know, in the production meeting, well, let me put it like this. Let me set it up. Back in the day when there was a candidate running for a congressional office, like Martin Sable, I can't remember how many times that he was at my mom's front door, knocking on the door, talking to her, either in her living room or out in the front yard.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the congressman. He was a congressman, and he retired, and then Congressman Ellison won that seat. But I haven't seen that kind of connection to the people from anybody running for any office in about 30 years. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know if Ilhan Omar, if she went to the black churches, if she went to the black neighborhoods, or even the white neighborhoods, and talk with people and find out their concerns. I know there hasn't been much except positive reinforcement in the Star and Tribune and other places. And no, I'm not against her becoming the making history in that position, but will she make the connection? And on this show, the Ron and Don show, will she make the connection for black Minnesotans in the 5th Congressional District? Now, the current congressman.
I think that's a damn good
not.
And fair question. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the current congressman has not. And I'm not saying that to be vindictive or mean or anything. I'm saying that because I see no results. You know, there were.
Well, now the current congressman that you're talking about is running for attorney general.
Yeah, I'm talking about the current.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I know he's running for attorney general. So, and I'm questioning that. And this has nothing to do with the allegations from the females. You know, one court documented,
mm-hmm.
one posted health records on social media, and writing stuff. So, I mean, I don't know. I wasn't there. I can't judge it. All I know is making a lot of news. And the Star and Tribune, you see, Mr. Edwards is backing off from Congressman Ellison because at the top of the fold, you know, I mean, at the headline, I should say, was that. It said Wardlow is inching ahead or moves ahead of Keith Ellison in the AG race.
Yeah,
you know?
He's up
and
by
that
says a over 5 points, 6 points. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 And, you know, I'm not agreeing with the polls or anything, but I'm saying that, okay, usually the Star Tribune would not do anything like that to derail Keith Ellison's election for anything. You know, and so what inside changed? What made the editorial board or the assignment editors, you know, move along with that? I know it's fact, but does it really have to be that big of a headline? But they wanted to let people
know. Well, you
know
that's interesting, Mr. Allen, that you made that point because the Star Tribune, based on its past policies and tradition, will probably be making a endorsement by Wednesday or Thursday of next week. And that would be about 4 days before the election of the 6th of November. That's a good observation because the editorial board, I assume, has interviewed and vetted both of the challengers it's actually three challengers for the AG's position. There's also a Mr. Johnson who is like an independent candidate who I think was at about 3% or et cetera. That's a good question. Again, the phone lines are open. Mr. Allen, get that number.
Yeah, we do have a caller.
I'm
we
interested
do have
to
a
hear
caller.
From some of the Ellison's supporters.
Yeah, that number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. It takes your quarter. Caller, friend of the show, it looks like Mr. M. You're live on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, good morning, gentlemen. Good morning. Very, very great conversation.
Good morning.
I really enjoy the gentleman from the St. Louis area. He really makes some very salient points. For someone that's not from our area, I mean, it's very impressive. But what I wanted to ask Mr. Allen, if I could, is there any way that you could get Miss Ilhan on the program? Have you ever tried to do that?
You know what? I, a while back, sent her campaign an email. Now, it wasn't this year, but it was like a couple of years ago. And then I made a phone call. That's when she was running for the seat she's currently in. And It was at a time when Alpha News was kind of heating her up on the alleged married to her brother thing. And I don't think, this is my opinion because I've never made connection with her or her campaign manager, but it was my opinion that she'd rather not be questioned by myself or Mr. Edwards on anything, that was not a safety place, a place of safety for her. I mean, I would invite her again.
I concur with that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would invite her again. I mean, I will shoot out for like next Saturday and ask her, will she call in? And we'll see what happens. But, you know, she has associates in the state capitol at the legislature that, you know, somebody, Mr. Edwards, this is going to be funny. I walked up on some guy that, you know, knows, you know, Senator Champion, Senator Hayden, State Representative Moran, and they know Ilion. And at this time, this person who's cool with me, he said we went to your Facebook page and Bobby Joe Champion jumped backwards. He said, turn from that. So it's kind of scary for him is what I'm trying to say. And,
Well, but your comments, you know, earlier, you know, about reaching out to the community, showing what your platform is, glad handing, coming to all constituents in your community that you want to represent. I mean, I would think that that's basic 101 politics. And
but
so that's
also,
the basic.
Also, go ahead. Yeah, I know, but she's not. Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying that's the basic issue that I have with that candidacy is I don't see any basic experience. I don't see anything that shows me the competence. I don't see – so you get to play the game, you got to understand the game, okay? And so in breaking it down that way, I just don't see anything that is going to be any kind of a contributor with the history of our country, where we're at, the complexity of what it takes to get something done. I mean, I just don't see it.
No, it's not. And Mr. I need to tell Mr. Edwards this too. You know, our leadership, the political, how can I put this? Tastemakers, stakeholders out there in the Black and Native American and the Somali community, especially in St. Paul, they have no words or no questions or no analysis for this Betty McCulloch who's running again. You know, just basically she'll walk in the office. But when you drive down Snelling toward 94, there's this big thing that looks like a big white canoe sitting there with private money in the middle of the 4th Congressional District, okay? You have all these areas being torn up and redone because, believe me, it's not going to be as poor as it looked on the corner of University and Snelling in about 6 months, okay? And no one's asking her where was the community benefit agreement for the Rondo area, for this Midway Hamlin area, for the, you know, down by Dale's Reed, the Rondo, all that. And it's really interesting how laid back that everybody's being over here, including the mayor, who's cool. I like him. I voted for him. You know, but, you know, why that? Why are you going to let another congressperson walk in that oversees your district that has not looked out for the least of these? And I'll let you guys respond.
Well, you know, again, Em is a guest caller in and has kind of raised the question. As I said, Em, I concur with regards to Em. I just had the feeling, Val always had the feeling that she's not comfortable with strong-willed Black American males, if you will. And, you know, it's her choice. It appears that she's going to win the seat, succeeding Congressman Keith Ellison, and become, again, the second Muslim in the United States Congress. Junior, though, to Congressman Carson of Indiana, who has a real stellar reputation as being a guy who gets things done. So, you know, my comment is that it's just like a caller that we had here, I don't know, a couple of 3 weeks ago, tried to accuse us of attacking Congressman Ellison and et cetera. And so, you know, I've get tired of listening to that same rhetoric. But let me end that I have the bully pulpit. I am most concerned, M, and I stated it at the beginning of our program this morning from here in the Twin Cities, I'm very concerned about the future of Chief Madera Arredondo to continue as the first African-American chief of the Minneapolis Police Department, 150 years, if you will, in existence. And the reason I say this, and, you know, I don't see any calls coming in and et cetera, is the interesting piece that has been put together by Paul McEnroe. See, folks get to playing like, and this is in support of Mr. Allen's position, playing like they got amnesia, Alzheimer's, or et cetera, and can't remember different activities, actions, and et cetera. Paul McEnroe was the reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune that wrote a big piece a number of years ago that ultimately led to the destruction, as I said earlier, to the African-American police organization, if you will. They actually destroyed it. The African-American police have no organization, Black Police Officers Association, or anything like that. Right now, the KSTP and McEnroe, as the director of investigative reporting for KSTP, former staff writer for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, are really going after Arredondo, and they're using the father of the deceased. Now, you know, you had some questions a year ago about the constitutional rights of Officer Muhammad Nord.
Yes.
It's quite clear that the Star has captured someone who is very effective, that being the father of the deceased, of Justine. And one of the things that he said last night in part one and part two of the so-called series, where the KSTP sent a reporter all the way to Sydney, Australia, and she asked an interesting question last night on the 10 o'clock news, which actually was the second stage of the three-part series. And I was shocked. I have to be up front. I was shocked when she asked the father of Justine if he had ever received an apology from city officials and others upon the death of his daughter. And he said no. And I was surprised by that because I had heard and been told in certain circles that apologies had been made, but now we're finding that it is not true. But the concern that I have as an African-American is that this seems to be a well-coordinated attack to push our Chief Arredondo away from any opportunity to be reappointed by the mayor. And by the way, we're coming up on the 1st of November, and the mayor has not indicated his pleasure at this point. He has not indicated that he intends to appoint Chief Arredondo to a three-year appointment as permanent chief of the department. And I just hope that, you know, many of our quote-unquote articulators, leaders, and et cetera, I hope they're taking note of that. Because once that door is closed and you are pushed off the diving board with no water in the pool, you'll be another 10 or 15 or 20 years before you ever get consideration for another black chief in the Minneapolis Police Department. And there are at least five votes on the Minneapolis City Council as we speak that really do not support the appointment to a permanent position of Chief Arredondo, but they don't think and feel that the chemistry is correct. But if after you look at part three of tonight's KSTP's interview with the father in Sydney, Australia, things could drastically change. Just wanted to put that out there.
You have tremendous points on this, and it just all seems to fit together. I mean, when you think back to when this incident happened, and, you know, the current chief at that time was out of town on a vacation.
In Colorado.
Now, I don't believe, just from an outsider standpoint, that internally she had universal backing, let's say, by her police for a number of reasons. I think one, because she was Native, one, because she's a woman. And so this transition to Mr. Arredondo, a long time, like you say, this long time policeman. He's been with the department many years, quite qualified.
26 years. Mm-hmm.
Perfect for 26. Him, but also to see, you know, we have a union, we have people that have ulterior motives, and you can kind of feel this scenario, especially with the silence from the mayor and with this appointment coming up and not really seeing much from there. It makes you wonder.
Yes, and I'm aware that the mayor had a meeting, a private meeting with Chief Arredondo 2 weeks ago this past Tuesday. And I was thinking of the mindset because I had a chance to sit with Chief Arredondo and chit-chat very briefly at a beautiful gathering honoring the success of Hospitality House, if you will, at the Metro Ballroom in Gold Valley. And, you know, Rondo is a man who is able to control his passions and et cetera. So he clearly, first of all, did not violate any trust between he and the mayor. But he certainly did not seem to be a person who had just been told by the mayor that I intend to announce your reappointment on, let's say, November 1st, if you will. I just don't have that sense. I know that there is what we call the unholy five council members. You know, if it had not been, and we have some time left, if it had not been for Mark Johnson, who so many attacked, if you will, which I couldn't totally understand, if it had not been for Mark Johnson holding that 13-member council together, Rondo would not have been appointed as chief interim of the department. And, in fact, what they were going to try to do is appoint the man who is now assistant chief of the department, Chief Jolts, if you will.
Well, isn't there some kind of a power struggle, though, going on between the mayor, the city council, as to who actually is going to run the police department?
Absolutely. Because
isn't there something I keep hearing that they want the mayor, they want to dilute the process? I mean, where does that stand? Do you have any idea?
Where it stands is that it was the Minneapolis Charter Commission. You see, the folks didn't do their Civics 101. It was the Minneapolis Charter Commission that blocked Cam Gordon and his associates from forcing the legislation through, the ordinance change through. The Charter Commission indicated that there would be a three-month hiatus, if you will, and they would come back to this sometime in the spring of 2019. Well, that's not what Cam Gordon and some of them on the council were expecting. They never saw the Charter Commission coming, okay? If they would have looked at the Charter Commission, they would have known that the chairman of the Charter Commission, who is a white male, is married to an African-American woman. And so when they were meeting and talking in terms of the future of Chief Arredondo, I'm very much aware of a conversation that took place in an Asian cafe in North Minneapolis a week and a half ago, in which two city employees, both white females, meeting with a high-ranking white police officer, were talking in terms of the future of Chief Arredondo, as it pertains to continuing to be chief of the department. And, you know, I would feel remiss as a black man if I did not have a forum, which I do, and lay that out on the table on this program on a Saturday morning, because I got to tell you, man, I'm getting a little nervous with regards to the silence of the mayor.
Can you briefly say, I mean, what are they trying to change? I mean, what is the structure now, and what are they trying to change?
Here's the structure. Under the Minneapolis City Charter, the one of the only departments that is the sole has the sole authority stewardship is the police department, fire department, and the civil rights department, okay? The resolution that was put forward that created a real problem between the council president and the factions who did not think that it was timely was that, and I wrote about it in my column in the Spokesman Recorder and talked about it on this program and talked about it on my television programs and et cetera. They wanted to change the ordinance that so that all 13 members of the city council would have authority over the police department. Now, technically, they do. They have authority with regards to fiduciary matters, budget matters, and et cetera. In fact, the conversation that I overheard and am privy to, if you will, they were talking in terms of how the assistant chief of the department was placed in charge of the budget, if you will. And already $500,000 has gone in a different direction to white institutions in North Minneapolis. But, hey, our leaders, as Mr. Allen knows, don't consider that to be important. But finishing your question. So the proposal for the charter change, and this is how the Charter Commission got involved, was that it would be placed on the ballot in November, and that if it was affirmed, if you will, is that the police department would respond to all 13 council members. And you got some council members on there that have a combination of wanting to change everything and take police off the streets of our city, if you will. That, you know, if a person can have that dream, but I can tell you it will quickly turn into a nightmare, all right? So to your question, I hope that I've answered it with the specificity, yes, legally, that one should go, is that they want to change the ordinance, the charter, actually, I'm sorry, actually the charter, that all 13 members and the mayor, that had to be 14 bosses that the chief would have. Now, they've had years to do that. It's interesting that this did not come forward until after the Minneapolis Police Department had, quote-unquote, had appointed to head it the first African-American in the history of the department. And you got to remember, St. Paul, much more progressive, has had three black chiefs in the last 40 years.
Yeah, in addition to high-ranking fire fighters.
That's right.
St. Paul
now,
is historic.
By the way, on that particular point, it's interesting, though, for a long time, this department, fire department, was under federal supervision. And for anybody that wants to challenge or et cetera, I clearly know all about that because I was the chairman of the court-appointed oversight committee for 13 years that made sure that the fire department got integrated, if you will. But in the case of the police department, if you will, we have not had that until the appointment on a temporary basis of Chief Arredondo. And as I said before, I stand with Arredondo. I think he's been an excellent chief. I think he's a man of the proper demeanor and et cetera, but the Federation hates him. They hate him. And they are doing everything they can to undermine his stewardship. And I'm afraid the way things are going, I think they're going to be successful. And I think what will happen is that we'll have leadership out here sucking on their thumb, pretending that they didn't know what happened.
Yeah. And with that said, we have right under a minute left. But Mr. Edwards and M, I need to tell you that the Washington Post has just reported at 11:10 a.m. this morning that the police are responding to an active shooting in Squirrel Hill, an area of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And they just posted the story, and it's only two lines, which means it's ongoing right now. So hit the TVs any minute. I just wanted to let you know
right.
that, but we
all
have 40 seconds. 40 seconds
right.
left.
Thank you, M, for your inquiry. Thank you for your inquiry. All right, Mr. Allen, let James Brown or somebody take us on home. All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay. Thank you.